Good evening. This is the regularly scheduled meeting of the San Luis Coastal School Board. Welcome. We did have a closed session tonight, and the board did not take action, but we discussed negotiations with the various employee associations, and we also had a conference with our real property negotiator on two items of property listed on the agenda. Now, the next item would be, is anyone going to ask that we change the order of business tonight? All right, then we will just move through the agenda as we have it. And the first item would be approval of minutes. Anyone have a motion?
I move we approve the minutes of February 21st.
Is there a second? Okay, motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Millar. Discussion?
I just wondered if we wanted to mention in presentations, when Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo High School students were awarded honor for their Skills USA, the teacher mentioned Gary Hamilton. Contribution as past teacher, and he made the comment about the reason these kids are so great is because of Mr. Hamilton's wonderful teaching, and it's being manifested here. I thought that was such a nice comment and a tribute to a wonderful teacher who retired. So I don't know if we wanted to include that, but I think it would be appropriate.
Mr. Unger? Okay. Mrs. Holmes, would you add that sentence? And then we'll move to a vote on the motion. All in favor? Oh, do you have another change, Mrs. Roger?
Well, I just need to abstain from the vote because I was present for closed session but not open session.
Okay. Thank you. So all in favor? Aye. Opposed? It passes 6-0 with one abstention. Next, we'll move to the presentations. And I think we have someone from San Luis High here tonight, Mr. Jones. Mr. Buckmoyer and company. This is the San Luis Obispo High School mock trial. Champions.
Good evening, and thank you for giving us this opportunity to acknowledge a group of our students who excelled at this. Right on, Ed. That looks great. Who excelled at this year's mock trial competition, and rather than me hog the spotlight, I want to turn it over to the deserving coach and the students. So let me welcome Dave Buckmoyer, science teacher at San Luis Obispo High School, who was our coach for this year's mock trial team. And his students.
Thank you much for this opportunity to come before you and explain a little bit about what we've been doing. These are members of my team. It's not the whole team. And they'll eloquently explain what they've been working on. So without any further ado, Catherine Nugent.
Hello. I'm a member of the mock trial team, and I'm just going to talk a little bit about team participation and like what I've been doing to prepare for the competition. And so I've spent numerous hours. I'm a lawyer, and I write questions for the witnesses, and I've just spent a bunch of hours looking through all their witness statements and writing questions for them and memorizing them. So it's really fun. I practice with my mom and my dad sometimes, and we just go back and forth, and she's the witness and I'm the lawyer, and it's really quite fun. So she's memorized everything. So of course, when she comes to the competition, she can sit there and kind of say what the witnesses is supposed to be saying along with them. It's very entertaining. And so she knows when they mess up and can kind of go, uh-oh, or like when they do a good job. And I've just been bringing my contributions to the whole mock trial team and helping in the team participation. And so someone else.
I also am a member of the mock trial team, and I'm going to focus mostly on our preparation before each competition. We meet 3 days a week, Monday mornings before school and Tuesday and Thursdays after school, for approximately 2.5 hours each time. And the session we focus on, we have a run-through of the prosecution and the defense side, and we go over any points that we think the other competitors might bring up. And we kind of spar against one another, and we have lawyers who come and act as a judge keep order in the courtroom, and we practice our objections and our closing and opening statements before each competition so that we can better prepare ourselves.
This year was on the Fifth Amendment, on search and seizure, and then we move into the real trial and have to base what evidence is comes in off of what happened in the pretrial motion and all the other normal objection factors. So.
My name is Billy Mann. I was also a defense lawyer for the team. Our first competition, per se, took place in Santa Maria, where we had a scrimmage of sorts against other county teams, as we're not allowed to, you know, see our competition for the actual proceedings. We weren't able to see their cases, so we had scrimmages versus other teams from other counties, and that was our first practice. And the first competitions took place in early February. Our preliminary rounds, the defense competed against North County Christian, and our prosecution competed against Napomo, and we won in both of those. And based on a point differential in each of the rounds, the teams are seeded for the semifinals. And we were seeded first, and our prosecution went against Atascadero, and we won, and then were able to advance to the finals. But due to the Tour de California, the courthouse wasn't available, and so the finals took place against Templeton High School, who pretty typically wins the competition every year. And it took place in the vets hall. They had to set up a courtroom for us in the main hall of the vets, where actual court proceedings have taken place. And we competed against Templeton and that night, and it was a pretty full house, and it was they had to set up an impromptu courtroom, but we ended up winning versus Templeton, and so we'll be competing in Riverside in just a week or two.
Hi, my name is Laura Ashbaugh. I am a prosecution attorney on the team, as well as Catherine Nugent. And this victory was really sweet for me because I had been prosecution as well 2 years ago, and we had gone against Templeton in the final round, just like we did this year. Unfortunately, 2 years ago, we lost by just a few points. So it was very good this year to finally go to the victory and to go to the state competition. And in addition to the big trophy we got, we also got several individual awards. We got awards for myself, as well as Billy Main, who just presented before me, Erica Owen, another prosecution attorney, Margie Knox, who did our pretrial motion, and also our witnesses, Arielle McGeed and Anne Spivak. So we had many very excellent witnesses and attorneys on our team, so that was a major accomplishment for our school.
I'm Keisha Burrell, and I'm a defense witness for the mock trial team. And the way the schedule is going to work when we go down to Riverside is we're leaving March 16th in the evening on a Thursday, and we're going down. That Friday we expect to participate in two of the trials, and there's a social exchange for the students down there. Saturday are also two more trials, as well as dance, and hopefully on Sunday we'll be participating in the final rounds, then coming home after award ceremonies and such.
Which witness were you?
I'm Brooke DiMartini.
Why don't you tell the board and the audience a little bit about how the schools are scored for witnesses and how they present their testimony?
Witnesses are given a booklet, and their testimony states all the facts that they know about the situation. In my case, I was a ex-girlfriend of the deceased, and the way we work with it is we go through and choose facts that'll work for both the defense and prosecution sides and quiz each other on both of them until that they're scored on how well they portray the character, as well as how well they know the facts and handle how well they handle being on their feet.
Hi, I'm Margie Knox, and I did the defense pretrial, and I you've been told about how we take a constitutional issue and argue it one way or the other. So this year was all about the Fourth Amendment, and that was interesting to me to just further explore this. And we're given previous case laws, and in mock trial, I had a hard time and learned to be organized and use these case laws to prove my point or to look for similarities and differences that would go for my side. And this was a skill that I feel that I'm a lot more adept at now that I've done mock trial. Also, you probably wouldn't see me here last year because I probably would not be the one to volunteer to speak in front of you. And I'm really excited to say that I am here now, and mock trial has been really neat for me.
Just in closing, I'd like to maybe echo that as the most important thing that goes on there. So I'd like to thank you for your support. We appreciate that. And I'd also like to
mention, because there's always a need for good attorneys and people in the legal system. So that's good. Congratulations, all of you.
I just wanted to say that that as the evening proceeds with the trial at the Vets Hall that night, the Vets Hall was packed. There weren't very many seats that were available. And what was remarkable about the way the students performed was that they inhabit their roles. So they are students who become attorneys and become witnesses, and they take on alternative identities. And within a half an hour of getting into the trial, it was as real could be, and they did a terrific job. The witnesses are fascinating to watch because they are both presenting the facts, but they're also using the personality of the character who they are portraying to do that. So I invite you all to attend next year one of the mock trial competitions so you get to experience it. But they all did a wonderful job. Thank you.
I think quite a few of us were there. I was a scorer, but they wouldn't let me score any of the schools in San Luis Coastal.
One last thing. Mr. Buckmoyer, aren't you the father of Lindsay Buckmoyer? I wanted to say to the last person who spoke and the rest of you on courage on getting up and speaking, I'm sure you learned some of that from Mr. Buckmoyer. Because I had the privilege of teaching his daughter when she was in eighth grade honors English at Tascadero Junior High. I was doing a long-term sub over a quarter of the year. And I took the kids down to a California Coastal Commission meeting on that Hearst project at Embassy Suites. It was packed. People couldn't even get into the room. There were so many people. They were spilling out to the lobby and everything. Lindsay wiggled her way in there as a speaker. She got up there in front of all the TV cameras, and she just rocked the house with her arguments for the side of her debate and got herself on the evening news and everything. So she must have learned some of that from her father. So way to help these young people speak out. I think that's great, and congratulations to all of you.
I just wanted to acknowledge Mr. Buckmoyer's contribution to this, and also I see Melissa Newman, who's the teacher coordinator for the Pacific Beach mock trial team, which is near and dear to my heart. We scrimmaged Templeton right off the bat, and it was an awesome accomplishment that you beat them. And I want to put in a plug for folks who go to the mock trial. Just the way they write the mock trial booklets alone is entertaining. They use gender-neutral names like Brooke DeMartini. So some schools show up and the person has a female gender character, but the attorney who's questioning them is thinking of them as a male, and it actually gets quite interesting at times. So, and there are always very interesting scenarios. Last year was illegal street racing, and I think there's scenarios, you know, the kids get into them because they are real life, you know, drama kinds of things. But terrific accomplishment, and I hope you do well next year. I hope PB does better next year too. Thank you.
Thanks for coming to present to us. All right.
They need to leave and go study for their finals.
Oh, they took a night off from studying. Great. The next item is another very happy item on the agenda, and that's when we hear from our Teach Foundation representatives about the mini-grants this year. So, Paula Lau.
Hello, I'm Paula Lau from the Teach Foundation. I'm juggling all these envelopes here because I've got gifts to bestow to 12 different teachers. Actually, I think there's some of the grants are by a couple of teachers, so you'll hear their names as we come across them. But it is such a pleasure to get to do this. We, as the Teach Foundation, enters its closing its fifth year, and we've given out $80,000 in grants over that time. So we're fulfilling our mission, which is to be a support foundation which can fund those small projects that become big projects, actually, make a real big difference for kids. This particular winter cycle, we are awarding 13 grants. I've given each one of you a press release, and for the audience, there are more press releases over on the side. What I would like to do is recognize all of the teachers that are here tonight. Many of them are correcting finals tonight, too. So I'd like to recognize them. I'd like each of you teachers to stand, so you don't need to come forward, but stand and continue standing as all the teachers are recognized. And then I will be handing out your award information after we're all standing. Is that all right? Thanks. First person I would like to recognize is Sherry Wright at Morro Bay High School. She's in the drama department. She's receiving 1,000 math department so that they can bring up the level of presentation materials for the kids. And we're awarding them $955. Now I'll put in a little plug. You might want to put these guys on the next, on the April agenda for the school board meeting, and that is Tom Weinschenk at San Luis Obispo High School's Latin Club and Latin Program. We are awarding $560 to Tom's program for a quiz wizard for Latin, and those of us who are somewhat familiar with Latin know it's a Kertamen machine and that the kids really need it because we have state champs. For 2 years running, we have first place kids in the state of California. Incredible achievement. And they'll be going to the state competition again in April. Well, you've heard the praises for Melissa Newman just a moment ago, and we'd like to praise her again because Melissa continues to write TEACH grants every single cycle. She is so full of ideas and exciting things over at Pacific Beach High School. This time we're awarding her $905 for a Photoshop Elements class so she can bring technology classes to her students at Pacific Beach. At Laguna Middle School, we have Nina Reinecker's Disney Transportation. Now, those of us who've had kids at Laguna remember that there's a spring trip every year, and the kids spend a lot of time preparing for this. It's a very big deal. So we're very excited to be able to support her work for $800. And we have a little bit of an unusual situation this year. As long as we're at Laguna, I'd like to speak to it. And that is John Gilesbrecht, his ASB leadership class, decided to submit grants, to research grants, to present them in their class, and then to give us a class load of grant applications from their entire ASB leadership class. We said, John, you know, it's a lot for us to figure out because we aren't quite sure which one of these would actually fly. So we said, to be correct and help the kids understand the process, we also want them to have to go through the rigor of selecting their favorite grant to us at TEACH, and we will fund it. And indeed, we have the author of the winning grant, Miranda Bear. And Miranda's grant is very exciting because the kids are concerned about physical education And so they asked to purchase some materials, some PE-type materials, to put on an assembly and to bring in a specialist. And all of that for $304.50. Those guys should teach us something about budgeting. So, congratulations, Miranda. Los Osos Middle School, Colleen Wall, $1,000 for her stage choir Heritage Festival trip. Now, what excites me about what Colleen's doing, and this is something Teach really likes to support, is this isn't just a go and observe. She has really enriched this trip and found additional things for the kids to do. So she's understanding that because we're in San Luis, some of these kids aren't getting out there. She's making sure she maximizes that opportunity. Now for some of the elementaries. Del Mar Elementary, Guy Crabb, one of our repeat grant winners, and we are always so excited because Guy has so many different ideas and different things that we fund, and this time it's for parachute play, $582.60 for four parachutes and containers. Now those of you who've been to elementaries that have parachutes know the kids love them, and as we try and find exciting ways to expand PE and bring it into the curriculum, parachutes are really fun. So, good going, guys. At Hawthorne Elementary, we have Elaine Hill's Read Naturally program, funding it this winter cycle for $749. We have funded Elaine before in this program. It's something I've told you before that Teach likes to do. We don't want to just put a little money in, want to make sure we finish it. It's got all the best elements of teaching in it. It's really terrific. And last but not least, I have also at Pacheco four teachers who work together. They actually submitted under Jill Banfield's name, but there's four teachers involved, and they wanted some science and social studies videos. We're funding them for $650.25, and that's Jill Banfield, Julia O'Connor, Connie Reynoso, and Kathleen McHugh. And we're very excited about what they're going to be doing over at Pacheco. So our master teachers continue to show us that there are great ideas out there, that money that's targeted to connect to those teachers who have the ideas and have the wherewithal to make those happen are spreading thin money wide. They're really getting a lot of return. And so we continue to want to ask the district to support the Teach Foundation. We are your foundation, the community's foundation, and we have the capacity, as we've demonstrated for 5 years, of getting the teachers' trust, helping them understand how we work, and always, always letting them know that it's our job to figure out how to fund them. So when a grant comes in that we might not fund in a given cycle, I always interface with that teacher and ask that teacher to resubmit and help him or her understand what it is about that grant that didn't qualify that time, but let's figure out how to do it the next time. Thank you very much for your time. Oh, one last thing. The check is in the mail. Dave Edwards has been out of the office, and so he will just be in this week. We have our funds with the Community Foundation, and so they have to be released from there, but the district should receive them within the next couple of days, and then the teachers will be able to requisition those funds from the district. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Paula. And congratulations to all the recipients, and thank you for taking your time to do something special for the kids. I hope you enjoy using these funds for the projects. They sound great. Okay, so
The next item on the agenda is public comment. And do we have anyone?
Madam Chair, had one more presentation.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have one more
presentation. And it's directed towards the company up here.
Uh-huh.
It's my pleasure to share with the board yesterday's news to some degree. The County Board of Supervisors declared the month of January as School Board Recognition Month. And we received the certificate and wanted to take just a moment to recognize the recognition that the county gave us. And if I might just take a second to read this, albeit posthumously, I think it would be appropriate. County Board of Supervisors says that whereas the mission of the public schools is to meet the diverse educational needs of all children and to empower them to become competent, productive contributors to a democratic society and an ever-changing world, and whereas local school board trustees are committed to children and believe that all children can be successful learners, and whereas local school board trustees work closely with parents, educational professionals, and other community members to create the educational vision the community wants for its students, and whereas local school board trustees are responsible for providing a solid foundation for our school system, and whereas local school board trustees are strong advocates for public education and are responsible for communicating the needs of the local district to the public and the public's expectations to the district. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, do hereby declare their appreciation for the members of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees and proclaim the month of January 2006 as School Board Recognition Month in the County of San Luis Obispo, and be it further resolved that the Board urges all citizens to join them in recognizing the dedication and hard work of local school board trustees and in working with them to support an education system that meets the needs of both today's and tomorrow's children. And I'd like to add an amen to that. Congratulations.
Thank you. So on February 3rd, we had our mini mock rock assembly, which all the kids in ASB participated in, and it's just to get more students involved to sign up for the actual mock rock that we're having this March. After the assembly, we have been holding auditions for participants, and so far we have 10 acts. And we also took applications for a host. We opened it up to the whole student body to get involved, and we have 3 hosts now. On February 8th, we had our annual career day hosted by Ms. Cox, our career counselor, and that was just a really successful career day. Also, she redid the whole career center, and all the students are really taking advantage of it. On February 11th, we had our Sadie Hawkins dance in honor of Valentine's Day. There were about 350 people there. The theme was famous couples, so everybody got to dress up, and it was just a really fun time. And in honor of API testing, how well we did, we have been taking trips to Disneyland. Each class has gone separately. So far, the seniors, the juniors, and the sophomores have gone, and the freshmen are going in about a week, I think. And also, our girls and boys basketball team, which CIF, also the girls water polo team, which CIF for the first time ever, and our boys wrestling team took the league championship. On March 3rd, we had our spring sports assembly. We had a video showing all the talents we have this season, and we also had a senior tribute, a senior slideshow, just to show memories that have happened, and we had students, seniors turn in all these pictures, and it turned out really well. And on March 7th today, we had some students go to the middle school and just talk to the 8th graders about what to expect when they come to high school. On March 17th, we will have a motivational speaker come for assembly at school, and that is Russ Peak. On March 18th, we will have the last Disneyland trip, which is the freshmen going. On March 21st and 22nd, we'll have the exit exam for the sophomores.
on March 25th, there's going to be a crab feed at the Morbay Rec Center at 5 p.m. It's to raise money for baseball. It's all-you-can-eat crab, bread, and pasta salad and drinks. And if you're interested, call Miss Ayotte in the Morbay office, which is 771-1845. On March 27th through the 29th, there will be ninth grade orientation in the lecture demo hall at 6 p.m. And March 31st is our big mock rock. There will be an assembly during the day, during the school day, and the mock rock actually starts at 7 o'clock. The doors open at 6:30. The tickets are $10 for general admission and students without an ASB card, and it will be $8 for students with an ASB card. And this year for Mock Rock, we're taking a really conservative approach, and there's just a lot of really good acts, and it's going to be a really good show. And March 31st will end our third quarter, so we're almost done with the school year, one more quarter to go. And also our dance team is going to New York for a competition, and on April 27th they're having their dance show at 7 p.m. in the old gym. And April 28th, we'll hold our ASB elections for next year's ASB officers.
All right, thank you. Teresa, tell us about Slo High.
Well, there's a lot going on at Slo High right now. It's an exciting place to be. This week is finals, which is really exciting, especially because Wednesday and Thursday are minimum days, and Friday means no school, but good luck to everyone studying for their finals. And Monday we'll begin our new trimester, home stretch for the seniors. Very excited about that. The eighth graders at Laguna are working on their registration, and we'll be finishing that up on the 9th. Looking forward to some new freshmen. Our novice Parley Pro team took second place at the UC Davis debate contest. They were competing against 30 other teams, so they did awesome. I would like to congratulate Aaron Flores, Jenna Ratkovich, Aubrey Whitaker, Alyssa Nushi, Shelby Trett, and Caitlin Lewis. So if you know any of them, congratulate them. The Slo High Band is going to Rio Grande on the 15th of this month for the County Band Festival. Good luck to them. Also, the Spring Choral Festival is coming up at the end of this month. Our choir is preparing to perform at the Performing Arts Center Thursday the 30th and Friday the 31st. I can give you my personal recommendation to those two events because I saw the music in our school's assembly last week, and it was beautiful. Our choir and band are doing great this year. Also, on a musical note, the Spring Drama is a musical, Mac and Mabel, and it is starting. I would like to recognize our girls' soccer team, though. They had an incredible season. They were undefeated all throughout league. Every game they played until quarterfinals of CIF. So they were incredible. Especially congratulations to Rose Valier, who was named MVP of the Pac-5 League. So they did awesome. So our spring sports are well underway, and we're looking forward to some great achievements from all of them. Last but not least, the Slo High campus is looking forward to the WASC team's visit, looking for our accreditation again. They are arriving March 26th and will be around campus until the 29th. And on the behalf of Mr. Jones, I would like to invite you to their welcoming reception. That is going to be at 4 p.m. on the 26th in the Slo High Library. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Teresa. And Simone, how about Pacific Beach? What's going on?
Well, I was going to congratulate the San Luis Obispo High School mock trial team, but they left. But anyways, we're still really happy for them. Our own mock trial team competed against Templeton High School and Napomo High School during the preliminaries and placed fifth after losing to Templeton and winning against Napomo. We almost made it to the top four in the semifinals with a total percentage points of 0.99. Three of our team members received honorable mentions. Aaron Castorina for playing defense witness and the defendant, Jess Markson. He did a great job. And Oscar Zaldivar received an honorable mention for playing another defense witness, Dr. Pat Choi. Our team decided that Oscar is Rookie of the Year because he learned his part only 2 days before the competition because one of our team members quit. And Oscar still performed like a pro. I received 2 honorable mentions for prosecution pretrial attorney and for defense attorney. We plan to honor our attorney coaches, Walt Millar, Jennifer Alton, and Duncan Skogsberg. We're throwing a party and a little breakfast thing for them on Thursday. We want to thank Teach for the grant for Photoshop Elements, and also, thanks to Teach Grants, 17 drama students were able to go to the PCPA and see the production of Our Town. Right now, our drama class is working on A Midsummer Night's Dream that we're going to be performing sometime at the end of next session. I'm not sure when yet. PBHS also participated in the Rotary Day Tolosa Job Shadow. This marking period, 26 students shadowed 15 people from the Rotary Day Tolosa Club, and afterwards we attended the Rotary meeting and lunch at the Madonna Inn. Aaron Castorina and Chelsea Gordon shadowed at Verdon Marketing and actually designed a logo for Rotary Day Tolosa Job Shadow. Mary Verdon and Kristen Johnson, the president and vice president of Verdon Marketing, actually came to our school and presented Aaron, Chelsea, and I with T-shirts that they had made for us. And we would really like to thank them for that. I can show you the T-shirts right now. This is the logo that Aaron and Chelsea designed. It's pretty cool. Just thought I'd show that off. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you to all three of you for coming. It sounds like you've got a busy spring, and I know that with finals coming, you're probably going to want to bow out. So we appreciate your coming and your excuse to go study.
Can I say one quick thing?
Yes.
I'm really glad you're going to go see Our Town. We went down to see that. It's really good. I like to see the young people exposed to that.
Any reports by school staff? All righty. Mr. Miller, anything new on the budget?
Well, the legislature has come up with a calendar that puts the budget into the public process and the hearings that begin. And so things should start heating up. I think that the first meeting was scheduled for today. So we'll start seeing some positional comments coming out from both parties on that. But on an issue of the legislature, the legislative analyst has proposed some mandated cost reform. As you're aware, as we turn in anywhere from $400,000 to $600,000 worth of costs to be reimbursed by constitutional law, and the state for 2 years has failed to allocate any money to pay us the reimbursements for that. Currently, they owe us in excess of $1.2 million. We're very anxious about that amount of money and how it's going to be repaid to us. Throughout the state, it's over $2 billion. So it's become a very significant amount of money, almost to the point where you can assume that we won't get 100% of it because it is much bigger than what they can afford to pay. But the legislative analyst has tried to attack the problem from a common sense point of view and put it into the form of a block grant that districts could.
I've brought to the board an analysis of some critical issues in the district, which drew attention to the achievement of English learners, economically disadvantaged students, and special education students. This analysis was an outcome of work done this year, setting the stage for the strategic plan. This year we focused attention on 3 product areas: at-risk and alternative education, education in the community, and system-wide communication. Our goals have been to get a handle on the current conditions, to develop communication strategies for what is, and most importantly, to develop priorities for what needs to be done. We've paid attention to our English learners. We shared the achievement of these children as a critical issue within the district. With the board's support, we have boosted services to our English learners. Based on our analysis, we have shifted from the concept of a pull-out academy to a concentration of services at the sites, and we'll be bringing a plan for those services to the board in April. Included in the board's packet tonight is a site-by-site listing of interventions offered across the district. We are identifying from experience those interventions which have had the greatest impact upon student achievement, and we will be incorporating those learnings into the budget proposals we bring to the board in April. We will also be developing communication pieces to better inform our parents and students of the programs available to them. In the area of alternative education, we find that we have evolved an impressive array of alternatives for attending school in San Luis Coastal, which we will share tonight. We don't see the expansion of that list as a critical issue, but we do believe that we can refine the services offered through these alternatives and do a better job of consolidating these alternatives into a single communication piece to share with our public. Areas of attention have included the expansion of Pacific Beach High School program through the addition of a fourth teacher, the review of the Pacheco program in response to No Child Left Behind, and articulation with our colleagues at Cuesta College and Cal Poly to make summer school and dual enrollment more available to our students. In the area of education in the community, we've convened a broadly representative committee to define standards for college career exploration and to consider the correct placement of those standards in a variety of disciplines. We have fully staffed our high school career centers. We have featured for the board some of the successes our students have achieved in the field of career technical education and education in the community. Tonight's student reports, I think, featured that. We're developing communication pieces to feature this strand of activities in our high school program to be shared as students plan their high school experience. Finally, we've alluded to the communication pieces under development, which will contribute to the goal of system-wide communication. And tonight's staff will share a little more on each of these topics in their report.
Thank you, Ed, for that introduction. If we may take a look at the district mission, it's always good to remind ourselves as to what we're about, and that is to educate students to become self-sufficient individuals, and for the district to guarantee to provide the highest quality programs and services for our students. Our commitment this year has been to address strategic products in the area of at-risk and alternative education, in the area of education in the community, and the area of system-wide communication. To begin with Area 1, at-risk alternative education, we have three products to discuss with you this evening. Number 1, the English Learner Academy. Number 2, prescribed intervention for at-risk learners in specific categories of risk. And 3, a clearly defined range of alternatives for attending school in San Luis Coastal from elementary through high school. I'd like to ask Damian Barnett, our Director of Instructional Services, who's been coordinating a district-wide committee on our English Learner program, to speak to you about that product.
Thank you, Mary. The product calling for an English Learner program was shared with the district staff in the fall of 2005, and since that time we've made considerable progress. We've hired new staff to make sure that all EL students who are scoring a 1 or a 2 on the California English Language Development Test receive what we call a second dose, or a second chance to work on the language arts instruction with an EL teacher. We've utilized categorical money to purchase consistent district-wide EL materials for each elementary EL specialist. We've provided professional development opportunities for the teaching staff by offering training in a technique called front-loading, which utilizes the adopted materials, and it makes the material more accessible for EL students. We've also provided training in how to understand and use data to better track these students and to know what their needs are
to meet the needs of the students at their level. In your packet, you have a product that we've developed that is also translated into Spanish for our parents and for our students, so they're aware of our before and after school programs by school site. Parents and students can easily access this list, as well as they are encouraged by their teachers to participate in these programs. I'm providing you an example of what takes place at Del Mar School. And it's a little difficult to read, but I think you'll get the idea. Basically, every every student, every teacher has a list of their students' progress, as well as the interventions that are available to them at school. So at a glance, a teacher can, knowing the levels of performance of their students, identify the interventions during the school day and after the school day to be able to keep track of a student's progress. We're replicating this kind of information across the board for all of our students. The third product has to do with clearly defined range of alternatives for attending school in San Luis Coastal. We have policies of open enrollment and flexible credit, which you've approved, which allows students to access credit in a variety of different ways. At our elementary school level, we have Pacheco Two-Way Foreign Language Program, Teach School, an accelerated learning environment for advanced students, the sixth grade option at Los Osos Middle School, Pacific Beach High School as a continuation school and an alternative for our kids at the secondary level. We have honors and advanced placement courses at the high school level. We have courses at Cuesta and Cal Poly, which our students access. And we have an independent study partnership with Templeton Unified School District, again, available to our students based on their request. If I may move to Area 2, Education in the Community, I'd like Mr. Halfman to present the first product, Student Outcomes, as he has been meeting over the course of this year with a secondary committee, Career Technical Education, to address the student outcomes for all of our students.
As you recall from our strategic plan, Area 2 deals with standards for what students should know and be able to do with regard to identifying and pursuing college and career aspirations. Another element of that plan is the development of our career centers, followed by the student experiences in college and career exploration, and finally, clear communication regarding college career exploration opportunities. As Mary just mentioned, our Blue Ribbon Committee has been composed of all elements of all five of our secondary schools, administrators, counselors, core curriculum teachers, vocational curriculum teachers, and they're very enthusiastic about the work they've done. We've also just received, within the last 3 weeks from the state, and the committee's had a chance to meet since, the updated version of the state's career technical standards, the 433 pages of which was quite a challenge for the committee to thoroughly analyze. But areas that we're exploring now for middle school students in terms of our outcomes, including exploring personal qualifications for career success, career trends, and the development of an educational career plan. For our high school students, our outcomes include strategies for self-promotion, understanding of the products, services, and information available through technology, applying problem-solving, critical thinking, and critical thinking strategies, and the development of leadership, teamwork, and citizenship skills.
The second product area is our College Career Center. Thanks to your support, we've been able to hire full-time career technicians at our two comprehensive high schools, as well as we have the support at Pacific Beach High School as well. We're restoring our centers, gathering our resources, networking with other schools, and exploring the California Department of Education model sites for ideas relative to how model career centers work. Thank you for that support. The third product, Student Experiences in College Career Exploration, our expectation is that all students, K-12, will be able to realize their domains. Certainly a clear communication about what our college career opportunities are for all of our students at all levels is very important. Our clear communication opportunities currently that we provided, you heard a little earlier about Pacific Beach High School's job shadowing project. We have Skills USA. We have ROP classes with community classroom experiences. We have the Future Farmers of America. We have auto troubleshooting, Future Homemakers of America. We have the 12th grade English job shadowing project at Morro Bay High School. And we have college and career nights offered at all of our secondary schools. So we're on the road in terms of identifying these opportunities and with the support of our counseling staff being able to guarantee these services to all students, K-12, we think we'll be able to communicate an articulated program to our families. As far as clear communication in terms of college exploration, certainly we'll be developing brochures for our families so they'll be able to realize the articulation that we have with Cuesta and Cal Poly. We have had the opportunity to meet with both Cuesta and the Cal Poly staff to highlight some key areas with Cuesta College. We had a concern about when Cuesta's summer school program was to start. Well, they're starting a week later this coming year in order to ensure that our students are able to move easily into summer school without the overlap that they've traditionally had. We're looking at increasing the number of high school courses that qualify for college credit. This is an ongoing project that we have with our tech prep program. We've been offering college success courses offered by Cuesta on our high school campuses. And we hopefully will be reporting to you in the near future that our students will be able to use their state test results as far as being placed in appropriate classes in English and mathematics at Cuesta. We've been working on this for a while. Cuesta did a correlation study with our students and found that our students who were proficient on the content standards tests over the last 5 years have demonstrated success at the college level in English and mathematics courses. So we're looking for our students to avoid having to take a placement test at Cuesta. And so again, an articulation with Cuesta. We also have a partnership proposal. You have it in great detail as an attachment in your board item. But just to highlight the fact, we have a commitment to work with Cal Poly in the area of developing teacher education. We are establishing a collaborative team model, which will allow the university supervising teacher, the master teacher, the student teacher, to assume new roles as we evolve as a collaborative team. We are hoping to address the recruitment issue and the retention issue and actually our professional development needs in this collaborative process with Cal Poly. So with new roles and a new commitment with Cal Poly, we will be able to, I think, support our staff in a different way. We have a very elaborate committee involved with Cal Poly School of Education and our staff as well, and we're looking forward to reporting more information later on in the year to you about this partnership. And last but not least, system-wide communication. It says one product, a continuum of formal communication, which will assist our community in the area of college and career information, counseling services available to all of our students. It's key that our public knows what we're doing in our school district. We feel that by putting together viable products that are accessible to our students and parents, that they will be able to understand what's available to them and allow them to make viable choices. We look forward to we look forward to formalizing this communication and having it available to our public. So, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm very impressed. I think this is a lot of conscious work, and I just really like the fact that you're going beyond planning to products and that make opportunities available. For example, I just thought of one that I think is available beyond the site, and that's the English instruction for parents of EL students. I assume that they go to sites other than their own child's school site for that in some cases. And there may be other programs like that, too, where people can participate even if it's not their own site.
Absolutely. Through our CBETS grant, coordinated by the adult school, we're able to offer classes for our parents at sites where there are 11 or more students. So parents are able to access that kind of support throughout the district based on numbers. But most importantly, and thank you for bringing it up, this has been a document that has been evolving over several years. It's important for us to communicate to our families. We found a need in our district English Learner Advisory Committee, as well as our Migrant Ed Committee, that they needed to know what kinds of support programs were available to them before and after school. And so we translated this, and it's been presented to our families so that they are well aware of what's available. As well, as we shared this across the board with the principals, ideas were gleaned from each other, knowing what's available across the district. So that's been a very positive byproduct.
Right. So we've got products and byproducts of this planning. I mean, sometimes I think people think that planning is sort of an academic exercise that stops, you know, short. But it looks like you're really taking it on to the next level. So I feel really happy about this. Anybody else want to comment? Mrs. Dickinson?
I was looking at clearly defined range of alternatives for our students, and I don't know if this is considered an alternative, really, but I thought maybe it is, since we're listing honors and advanced placement. We don't have AVID program, or do we? Do we have AVID?
Not currently. We've offered it in the past, yes.
Are we thinking of doing that, or maybe everybody's graduated from college in our district, all the parents? You know?
Actually, one of the groups that we're looking at supporting is our economically disadvantaged students. And AVID has a very structured program that begins at the upper elementary level through high school. And we're looking at that seriously as meeting the needs of that population.
I think it would be great, personally, a nice addition to our alternatives and our support spectrum. And one other quick thing was on the Career Center. I know with my own kids who went through our great school system and had superb educations and went on to college. Rollin specifically mentioned, you know, being at Pomona, because he's at a school where he met kids from all over the world, really. And his comment was that there's the kids here, even though we support public education, do we really want to funnel everyone into public college? And he felt like everyone was sort of programmed to go to either Cuesta or a CSU or a UC. And he hadn't been aware. He loved the college he went to. Later on, when we talked about it, he said practically salivate. They still get together all over the country. But the point is that he thought it would have been interesting to know more about the private schools. And a lot of kids don't go that route because they think it's so expensive. But you know, there's so much financial assistance at some of these heavily endowed schools. It is actually an option that's just as no more expensive than like UCs, perhaps, in individual cases. So that was one thing he wanted. He had what thought would have been good.
Mm-hmm. Good input. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the presentation. We'll move to the public hearing item. Yes, I'm sorry, Mrs. Roger.
Dr. Matakovich, I was just wondering as I look through this, noted for Pacific Beach High School is all programs occur between 8 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. So would that mean that additional remedial work with kids for the California High School exit exam occurs during the regular school day in some sort of a pullout, or?
Yeah, basically, the Pacific Beach is on two sessions, so there are students that are able to access these support programs within that the school day, as well as our high school exit exam classes at the high school level are also offered during the school day. So they would be able to access it.
So they're getting that same extra help if they need it?
Correct, yeah. They have an individualized schedule, so they're able to...
Good evening, and thank you for this opportunity. Tonight, I bring to you an action discussion item. And within our San Luis Obispo Special Education Local Plan area, we have a Community Advisory Committee, better known as CAC. This is a required committee under the Education Code of 56194. And the duties include items such as assisting parents in parent education, encouraging community involvement, assist in the development and review of the special education local plan, and review support activities on behalf of children with disabilities. The mission of this particular community advisory committee is to create an inclusive community where each person is valued. They support collaboration among individuals and agencies in order to honor their dignity and promote the aspirations of persons with differently abled. San Luis Coastal Unified School District, with the size of our district, is required to have two representatives on this committee. Currently, Mrs. Lois Perez is one of our representatives for San Luis Coastal. She has been invited tonight and would like to welcome her to provide you with any information, questions about the Community Advisory Committee. Tonight, also, I would like to introduce Lisa Simon, who has volunteered to be our second representative for San Luis Coastal to sit on the Community Advisory Committee for the remainder of this school year. She has been active in the education of her two children, teaches higher education, and volunteers in our community. The local plan requires the board to appoint our representatives, and I bring forward to you Lisa Simon. I'd like to give Mrs. Perez a time to speak about the Community Advisory Committee as well.
Thank you. Mrs. Perez?
Just to fill you in about what we're doing right now, we are revising the parent handbook, which we give to parents at their first IEP. This parent handbook contains their rights. It gives them information that they may need that they don't gather at, let's say, during the meeting, because the first IEP meeting for all parents that have children with unique needs, they're in shock at that point, and they may not get all that information. So this handbook that is given to them at no charge to them is packed with information, what their parents' rights are, local phone numbers of offices that can help them with different questions, and where they can go for this information that they may not be able to ask, but they can read it through the handbook. And then we're also there in that handbook. So if they need somebody for support, the representatives are in that handbook, and they can call their local representative. The other thing we're working on is a cookbook for next year, so we can start raising funds through the sale of this cookbook to offer a scholarship for the students in these classes, because so many of these students are afraid to apply for scholarships when they're going on to a technical school or to a higher education. This gives them the opportunity to be acknowledged their senior year, accepting a scholarship for these children. And this is our goal for next year. We are also in the midst of doing the Golden Apple Award, which is acknowledging somebody that is working with our children. And we're also in May going to the state capitol for our legislation day so we can talk to our representatives at that level to ask for support for any bills that are going on at that point. We are in the midst of getting students from the local high schools to write letters to their congressmen, which we take up about the exit exam and how they feel about it or their concerns about it. We encourage the students that way to get involved with their rights as they're going out of school because they are going to become local voters. So we want them to have a voice. And this is one way we offer a bridge to them to know that their representatives are listening to them. And we've done this for the past 2 years, and some of the students have actually gotten letters back from their representatives. Is there any questions that you may have about the CAC board?
Mr. Spatter.
For those scholarships,
mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful one-on-one exchange to present what has been accomplished
mm-hmm.
and to be rewarded and to be recognized for that. It's a very rewarding situation. So I think if the high schools are made aware that there's a whole group of students who are accomplishing things in different ways, that may be something that would open up some of that you're discussing to help the students.
I will take that back, but actually let me make a point at San Luis High. My daughter is in special education, and I know there's one English teacher that does it through her econ class. She does encourage the students to apply for scholarships, also to look for help through the Department of Rehab. My daughter has an appointment. That's why I know that she does encourage them to go through that for their education, to go on to college, and she does encourage them that way. So San Luis High does work with it, and she was a teacher presented for 2 years for the Golden Apple, and that was Miss Beckius. But I'll point it out to the other representatives to take it to their high school because I think they would all benefit. Thank you.
Mrs. Dickinson.
I think that's a great idea about the scholarships because I have high school students who are in special education in my classrooms, and they are looking to Department of Rehab. That's where they're mm-hmm. thinking, I can get my college money. Mm-hmm. Or they're, we're helping them fill out FAFSAs. But the recognition is different. It's not just the financial support. And there's all these all these scholarships in the bulletin every day and on the wall by the counselor's office, and they never take one of those papers. Mm-hmm. It's like a different league, and they know they're not going to compete in that. But that would be nice because near graduation, mention who won certain things, that's just a really good idea, both the cookbook. Is it too late to do those recipes? That came across my desk. We haven't done that
yet.
No,
it's not too late. If
good.
You would love to submit one,
yeah.
We would love to take it on.
How do we do it?
Well, I think it's through the special education department.
Yes, through Miss Elba office, call them, and they will be able to get a form for you, and we would love to have the recipe submitted so we could get it going. We're hoping to get it off the ground next year, closer to Christmas, so we can start selling them.
And for the high school...
Bring them back to us.
Yeah, usually it's the kids, too, their families
yes.
that are in the special education department.
Yes.
And the letters... Is that something that you send out to all the special education teachers in the high school level, that opportunity, more information about how the kids can write those?
Actually, I started it with a teacher there at San Luis High, since my daughter goes to the high school. And the other representatives of Atascadero High and Paso Robles High, they are going to be taking it to their special education teachers and implementing it, hopefully, through the English class. That
we wouldn't mind participating at AG.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds good.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to get it through more schools of writing it, and that's what we're hoping to do. I know that, speaking for myself, I was in special ed. Students are afraid of applying for the scholarships because they don't think they're worthy of these scholarships. They don't think their grades are worthy enough. And this is why we are starting the scholarship fund through the cookbook, so we can show them that they are.
That's excellent. It sounds like you're a very active group, and thank you for telling us about it. I'm sure Mrs. Simon's going to be a real asset. She participated in the study session on special ed and has children at SLO High and has been involved with district activities for a number of years. So,
are we making a motion right now?
I would ask for someone
to I'd like to make a motion that we appoint Lisa Simon as the representative to the San Luis Obispo Special Education Local Plan Area Community Advisory Committee for the remainder of the current.
Okay, motion by Mrs. Dickinson, second by Mr. Millar, and I think they were all seconding it, basically, so I think we're ready for the vote. Would you like to say something before or after?
I just wanted to say that one of the reasons that I wanted to get involved in this is from my experience with the district and talking to different parents, one thing that I've noticed that is that Jackie and the district is very committed to providing the services that these students need. And parents sometimes, because they're so overwhelmed and they're dealing with so many different issues, may not see that. So what I would like to do is to help with the communication between the district and the parents. The goal is to help all these children become...
...to authorize the school districts to levy development impact fees in order to mitigate the effects new development have on the school district over both the short time frame and the long time frame. And when I'm talking the long time frame, our fee impact justification study forecasted out 20 years to try and predict what types of impacts new development would cause our district. 2 years ago, the board increased fees whenever the state allocation board set the maximum level one fees, and the state allocation board has done that again. They've raised the level. Our development impact fee justification study, even though it hasn't been updated for inflation, is still valid and still justifies fees in excess of the state level one maximums. So we will be asking the board to provide direction to us about your desire to go ahead and increase our fees so to the state allocation board level one maximums. It would mean a difference using last year's development impact fee income. It would have made a difference of $229,000 to us. Next year, depending upon how much development goes on in the community, it could mean more or less. Any questions?
Mr. Spadafore?
Thank you very much. In respect to correlating this request to the cost of real estate or doing business or construction where these fees would come from, would it be a fair statement to say that the increase in property values in this county over the last several years would also be supportive or be consistent with the increase you'd see here in terms of profit?
Yes, that would be fair.
Any other comments? Mr. Millar?
I think we should instruct staff to go forward with changing our fees to the state-approved level. I think we kind of owe it to future generations of San Luis Obispo students to be prepared to do what we may need to do in the future.
I think so, too. And Mrs. Dickinson, Mrs. Robinson, everybody is nodding. If the state has determined that it's appropriate to raise it to this level, then there must be justification for it on the facts. And I think we would be remiss if we didn't take advantage of that opportunity. So we will look favorably on such an item if you bring it back to us.
We'll bring it back at the next meeting. And the sample resolution is attached if you care to look at it now. But it will come back in its same form.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Item 7 is another discussion item. It's a
Since we mentioned recipes, you know, we have Robert's cookies up here. They're just sitting here, and I'm going to just pass them around. Oh, there you guys. Since it's in a meeting, so go ahead.
All right. Taking care of business.
They're good. We vouch for them. Item 7 is another discussion item. It's a resolution on the positive certificate of adequate funding, our second interim report. Is Kathy Hunter here? There she is. Kathy, do you have anything to give, or would you like to have Russell do it?
I'll get it.
Okay.
We'll make this one as short and sweet as we can, open it up for questions afterwards. This is a discussion item. We'll bring it back for a resolution vote at the next meeting. Should you have any adjustments, then we'll make those. Twice a year, we bring back the adopted budget for adjustments and certification by the board. Our second interim report is attached. It reflects all the changes in our financial condition since the first interim report, and they are not significant in terms of our overall budget, but they are required to be identified. If you look at the box on the first page that talks about revenues and then the differences, you will see on page 7.7 a distribution and detail piece of all of the changes that occurred within our revenue, so that the federal revenue changed by $89,305. The differences were made up of two changes. One was a $10,695 loss in Title I funding, and the other one was an NCLB, a No Child Left Behind program improvement grant of $100,000. So you could go through all of those and determine what the specific changes are. The page 7.2 has expenditure differences, and if you look at 7.8 and 7.9, you will see the detail pieces of all of that. So that you will see on 7.8 that the 1,000s, which denote certificated salaries, site block grant change of $990. And it goes on and on and on. The ultimate issue programs have a component of dollar-for-dollar expenditures and revenue. So if you get a dollar of revenue, you got to spend a dollar. It's a self-balancing situation. So when you see significant changes between your adopted budget and your first interim or your second interim, it's almost always because of categorical programs becoming clear to us at some point during our budget year. And at that point, I'll give it open to questions.
Okay, well done. Anybody? This is a fairly routine act for us, and you've explained it well. It doesn't look as though we have too much. Mrs. Botwin?
Question. Russell, on page 7.1, would you explain the first bullet there in the middle of the page? State identification of categorical reduction for basic aid districts in the amount of $54,000 plus.
What we have is a ruling by the state of California that we must share in the pain of revenue limit districts. So what happened was the state, you know, has a structural deficit that they have shorted school districts the amount of money that is constitutionally guaranteed to them under Prop 98. And that shortage is accomplished through holding back on revenue limit funding from the state. Well, we don't get any money from the state except for categorical programs. So they have deemed that our fair share of that pain will be visited upon our categorical programs. And our fair share of the pain for this year was $54,000 and whatever change that is.
Thank you. And that will continue to go on, is that correct? One way or another, they're going to get us?
It'll go on as long as they keep shorting us. I'm sure it will. I'm not sure we'll have that kind of a shortage this coming year or not. It's still up in the air. They're giving out a very large COLA, but they still have a $6 billion structural deficit. Whether or not they decide to deficit schools is a political decision in an election year that is yet to be seen.
Right. Make it. I'm going to ask you to re-inform me on page 7.8, 7.9.
Yes.
Okay, and the differences between. Would you briefly, for me and maybe some of the public who have questions about it too, and Walter, thank you. Oh, God, isn't he sweet? The 1,000 to 1,999, 2,000 to 2,299.99, and so on, because so many of those have the same items in it,
sure.
like like the Site Block Grant, Special Education, NCLB program improvement, et cetera?
Okay, what we do is under our coding system, the 1,000s are all certificated salary-related expenditures. The 2,000s are classified salary-related expenditures. The 3,000s, of which we just summarized those, are benefits related to salaries. The 4,000s are materials and supplies and books. The 5,000s are services such as insurance, legal, and utilities. And the 6,000s are assets that we purchase. Now, the reason you see such similarities throughout all of those codings is this is a program. So a program such as NCLB will buy certificated time, classified time, and some program materials, and maybe a computer. So you'll see it in almost all of those 1,000s through 6,000s.
Thank you. That was well said. Will you show me where, for example, we would take one of these and see the full cost of the program?
So
I don't have to go through and add
right.
up all these.
We do not summarize for you on the second or first interims the program costs. When we adopt our budget, you have your program costs involved in that. That's that very large printout we give you at the beginning of the budget year. But if you have interest in a particular program, we would be happy to include that in a correspondence to you. Do you have any particular program?
Pretty much all of them, but I just...
I know that was going to come?
I'll wait for the big guy to come along.
Okay.
The purpose of this is really so that the public and the county superintendent can see that we are proceeding with our balanced budget as we need to do to get the approval of the county soup, right?
It's to reflect that we're securing our financial future.
Okay.
Or not. But in our particular case, we are.
And we're going to certify that, once again, we are.
Yes, we are.
All right. Mr. Millar?
I just want to, since you mentioned the state... contemplating a large COLA, I just want to make sure that I'm correct in understanding that for a basic aid district such as ourselves, we don't get the benefit of that large COLA, and therefore some of this sharing the pain kind of thing might not happen to us next year.
Yeah, we get a COLA for some restricted programs such as special ed and transportation, but in our...
Or visual and performing arts requirement to add career technical education. I'd like you to know that that's the new name for applied arts and practical arts, so we thought we'd get with it and call it what it should be in the year 2006. This recommendation will allow students who enroll in career technical education courses in ag, business, computer education, home economics, careers in technology, and industrial technology to meet a high school graduation requirement. We know you had other areas that you wanted us to look into, and we will certainly in the future address the community college course requirement proposed, the community service school activity requirement, and specialized diploma, but we're not prepared at this time to present them to you. So we look for you to approve the proposed recommendation and incorporate career technical education into the foreign language, visual, and performing arts 10-credit requirement.
Thank you. The study session was so good that I felt comfortable modifying my viewpoint on this issue from one of trepidation to one of being very comfortable supporting the recommendation. And so I thank everybody for their presentations at the study session that helped me to see that this really is going to be beneficial for many students to have the freedom to make this choice. So I'm comfortable supporting it.
I move approval of revisions to Board Policy 6146.1.
Motion. Is there a second? Okay, motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mr. Spadafore. Discussion, Mrs. Botwin?
Yes, I took the opportunity. I think Mary Matakovich brought us some information at the meeting that we had on this, and I called her, and she gave me some more information, which you'll see on the second page. not the front page. You'll see the second page, the post-secondary commission, their breakdown, and they it comes a year after, so you can't get the current one. Anyhow, because I'm not very good at this, I did ask my husband under threat of things if he would do the math for me, and he said, well, depends on what you're offering. So in 2004, I wrote out in there on the front page, the little half page, so you could look back and forth if you want. He totaled up the 344 St. Louis High School grads, and what it breaks down into in 2004 were 43 enrolled in the UC, and that's approximately 12.5, 54 enrolled in CSU, about 16%, and 142 enrolled in Cuesta College or Community College, and that's 41%. So this was for 2004, and I asked him, could he correlate it, and he said he went back and did the same thing with 2001, which I didn't bother to give you, that it's almost exactly the same numbers. We have about 50 less students, high school students, between 2001 and 2004, but it was almost the same exact percentages across the board. So we've got some kind of continuity that we can see. Then Morro Bay High, we have a total of 217 grads, 8 enrolled in UC, 3.5%, 19 enrolled in CSU, 9%, and 134 in Cuesta College with 42%. So we have a total number of grads there, 578, 51 enrolled total, enrolled in UC, 9%, 73 CSU, 12.5%, and 283 enrolled in Cuesta College, which is 49%, about 50% of our graduating students. And I felt that now that you already have this ready here, that this was a step certainly in the right direction to give the kids the opportunities and find other ways that we can give them opportunities. This is going to come back, like we had talked once before about PE and how kids can get credit for a sport for their PE credit, which would open up another advantage for them to take another kind of course. That we need to do it. Mary has also got information. She has a friend at Cuesta, is going to find out how many of our Cuesta College students go on to four-year schools. When I called them about 5 years ago, they said approximately 3%, not over 3%. But they didn't have anything more factual at that time than that. So if we find out where our kids are going, and I know a number of them do go to Cuesta and also take remedial classes when they're there, so that it makes it more difficult for them to go on and or to go to a four-year school. These are the things that we need to look at in terms of whether we like it or not. We should offer different kinds of programs.
I would like to hear more on the community service when the administration's ready to bring that back to us. Next, we'll go to number 9, which is the educational technology plan. And I think we're going to hear from Damian Barnett and Amelia Samoas.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you so much. Damian and I are very pleased to have this opportunity to present to you a first read of the updated district's educational technology plan. I'm trying to adjust this because I'm so short. Okay. This plan represents the work of the district's EdTech Steering Committee, some of whom are here this evening, and we thank them for their hard work. Both Damian and I would like to share this presentation and let you know that the committee represented a cross-section of people throughout the district, including teachers, staff, business professionals, higher education, parents, and administrators. The three-year plan represented here this evening represents the vision and broad thinking of this steering committee. It represents a vision for the district, and it will provide a compass to guide our work as we seek additional funding from other sources, such as grants and the appropriate categorical programs. It's important to understand and acknowledge three important truths regarding this plan. This plan is a requirement by the state, and having an approved plan allows us to seek outside funding sources and apply for grants for our district. This plan is meant to be used as a guideline and not to be seen as a request for additional funding. Most of the plan is already funded through existing budgets. But if we need additional funding, we will be approaching you for that later. And most importantly, this plan in no way preempts the strategic planning process that the district and the board is poised to engage in. Pursuit of any goal recommended in the plan that requires additional funding will and must be a part of this whole strategic planning process. So with those understandings, we'd like to take the next 10 minutes to walk you through a summary of our technology plan. The district's mission statement was key in guiding our work as the Technology Steering Committee looked at what goals and benchmarks we wanted to pursue. Those are included in your executive summary that is attached, and you can also see all of the stakeholders who are involved. I believe we have someone who participated here this evening. Amy Shields was part of our committee, and I did invite the members to join us. The technology vision statement was created when the previous plan was developed and continues to be relevant to us today. Essentially, the purpose of the plan is to articulate a common vision for technology, to identify the performance goals and strategies that will help schools to use technology to promote student achievement, to focus district and community efforts on the rigorous technology goals, and to provide adequate funding and staff to support those goals.
While you're pausing, I just want to say apologies from Mrs. Roger. She has such a bad infection in her head. She started out hearing out of one ear, but she's now down to no ears, so she's going to go home and rest.
Oh, thank you. We understand. Thank you.
I'd say goodbye to her, but she won't hear me.
I'm sure if she has questions, she'll come back to us. The planning committee used a variety of sources to gather information for this process, a review of literature to identify best practices, other districts' technology plans, field experience and input from district staff, students, and other school districts, CTAP 2 teacher surveys, California technology surveys, district surveys of teachers, administrators, parents, hardware, and instructional media, and the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education staff experiences. There are five primary components to the plan that are required by the California Department of Education. Under each of these components, we have goals and measurable benchmarks that we plan to implement over the next 3 years with the help of our district staff and students. And I'll let Damian talk about the curriculum and professional development goals next.
Continue to promote technology as an effective tool that improves school-to-home communication and involves parents in school and district-level decision-making. Area 6 is community education, and in order to build a strong school-community partnerships, the district will target adults in the community who, one, do not have access to technology, or two, desire to learn basic and advanced technology use skills. Under community partnerships, which is another key area, the plan asked us to promote student learning and parental involvement. The district will continue to build and strengthen partnerships with parents, community organizations, educational institutions, the business community, and city and county agencies. And Area 8, the district will maintain a high-quality, user-friendly district website that provides stakeholders with current and relevant information about school sites and district operations. And finally, under technology proficiency, all district staff will become professionally proficient with technology. And I'd like to turn it back over to Amelia.
Okay. Here we go, tall to short. All right. Under the next section, infrastructure, hardware, software, and technical support, our technology standards are supported to provide adequate technology for curriculum, professional development areas, and overall productivity for our staff and students in a secure and stable network environment. And then the last component relates to funding and budgeting, which is included in the plan, and it's meant as a guide for us. As I said earlier, most of the plan is already budgeted for in existing budgets in our departments, and we'll come to you if we need additional funding through the strategic planning process. As our final slide, we want to get back to the technology vision, which was our guide in getting our students to technology literacy as lifelong learners. And I think that's it, right, Damien? Anything else? Okay. Well, thank you for reviewing those goals with us. And I'm sure you may have some comments or questions or anything else
we
can provide.
Do.
Very good.
Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
Mr. Millar, first.
Since we stopped on the funding part of it, I was just looking for some feedback on our sinking fund decisions and how that looks as far as your experience with replacement and upkeep.
Well, that has gone very well. That has given us a tremendous opportunity to get our computers and servers and routers and all of those hardware components that make the technology work to a refresh cycle that is doable and manageable and allows us to provide the hardware needed to support software for our students and teachers and staff.
And I just thought of another question, too. Is I don't know for sure that they're recent, but I've just heard about them recently. The requirements related to disposing of old equipment and stuff, is that going to impact us from a cost standpoint, or have we been following more or less those procedures previously?
We've been following those procedures previously. There is a fee associated with surplusing equipment that we pay vendors up front. And so we also work with a recycling company when we surplus equipment, so that makes it a little bit easier to handle the disposal as well. You're welcome.
Mrs. Botwin?
Thank you. I just wanted to ask, it said the fiscal impact implementation, the portions of this plan that require additional funding, it's on page 9.1, I'm sorry, will be submitted for board action. So these will come down independently, not all together. Okay, a little one here, a little one there.
Correct.
Okay,
many of it's already embedded within what the team will be bringing to you through the strategic plan and that process, so.
Okay, it'll be easy is what you're saying, right?
Yes.
It'll be soft?
Yes.
Okay, the other thing I wanted to comment on.
I think so.
I think I was really impressed with the people on your steering committee. You had an incredible group of people. Now, did they all come, or did they send emails to the meetings?
We have in our minutes, which we post online, who attended each of the meetings, so you can see. Then we had subcommittee meetings for each of the components that we went over this evening. So we had quarterly meetings for the entire committee, subcommittee meetings in between those, and then we also had a lot of collaboration over email as well.
Thinking in the project.
Thank you.
The fact that it includes community education and parents and, you know, young children to all the to grown-ups and teachers, ever-expanding skills. So the scope of the number of individuals and then the scope, too, of how many skills each individual is going to achieve, I think is excellent. And I like your mission statement. And I wonder about the advocacy for internet freedom and freeness or whatever, too. It might be good to talk about with young people coming up, you know, their AOL or whatever it is starting to talk about charging for emails and things like that. And I think it would be in the best interest of education for all of that to be completely free and, you know, have everyone access all of it. It's really important, and the voices would be important to have.
Yes, thank you. Absolutely agree.
Mr. Spadafore.
Thank you very much. Questions for both Amelia and Damian. I was curious, do we know how many students in our district have computers at home? Do we have a percentage idea?
I think the last survey that we did, it was close to 60%, if I'm not mistaken.
So 40% don't,
I can get back to you
on
that.
No, that's okay. Just for discussion purposes, because I have a few more questions I wanted to follow up with. Has there been any determination made regarding the students' ability to comprehend computer and software programs with the ability to do work at home on a computer after leaving school? In other words, do students who have computer capability at home tend to progress much faster and better? Mm-hmm. That's true? Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I believe so. Go ahead.
I think that's actually, I had an interesting discussion about students' ability just simply to do typing at the elementary school level, and despite one of the things that we're seeing is that some students who can type well use the computer and they have access, and then other students who don't are actually choosing not to use the computer in order to get their work done, even if they have access to it at home. So I think that's a little bit of a mixed bag, and then I think the education piece is key. It's not just the access at home that means success. It's whether they know how to use it, and whether that's either happening, you know, through education at the school site or, you know, perhaps at home. That's kind of the more important factor than just simple access to the to the equipment.
Because the reason I was thinking about that is that the California School Board Association seminar at the beginning of the year, there was a district that had partnered with a local business to refurbish older computers and provide them to students. And you talk about, you know, community involvement and partnership. Is that something that would be worthwhile to pursue if there are local businesses that would be willing? And in that one particular school district, the students actually did the work to refurbish the computers. So they learned how to do that, and then they were able to take the computers home. Is that something that you think would be worth pursuing at any point in time with the ability to do that?
Absolutely. I think that would be great. In fact, we've actually done that in the past. I don't think it's been within the past year, but when I arrived, we were partnering with a local company to provide refurbished computers to families.
Well, let me finish this, and I know Caroline's going to do this too, but I was just to keep a train of thought because I'll lose it soon. Are the people who are on your committee capable of discussing that issue with you as you progress along the road, because you do have business people there?
Yes.
Because they may have the sources and the wherewithal, and I know some others that would obviously be helpful, and so they would be working with you.
Okay. They'll work with us.
Another question, then I'll turn over the mic. Bilingualism in terms of access for parents at home who don't speak English to be able to communicate, how adaptable or what is present now for parents who are monolingual Spanish speaking to engage in a bilingual program? Is there anything that we have?
In terms of the technology?
No, the technology, and then the plan to provide additional interaction between the school district and parents down the road. Mm-hmm. What's being done in terms of thinking ahead to people, parents who aren't going to be able to read it in terms of the English?
Right.
Is there any planning on that?
We've been researching a student information system that would provide parent portal access, and so we're still looking into that, and we've presented some of that through the strategic planning process, so we expect that there will be a bilingual component to that. Currently, some of our schools have translated information for parents, and it's posted on their school site's website. I can think of a couple, Pacheco, and I think C.L. Smith may have something as well.
And I think
Student
Mary
services, and so we do have some of that going on, and we want to continue to expand that. I think that is very important
that we can develop. Appreciate you identifying it.
These are great questions that just led me to think about that sheet that you gave us right. With all the different interventions. You might even be able to update that a little bit for the parents' information and for the students so that they know which of those programs might give the students an opportunity to use the computer before and after school.
Very good.
Just
and some that's
more info.
That's exactly why we translate that and make that available to our Hispanic families.
Yeah, that's
families.
Great. Yes. So the family knows, and maybe there's even a parent, like a mommy and me or a parent-child session where they can work cooperatively. Although I know every time our daughter tries to teach us things, it's a little more stressful for her than it is for us. But if the generations can work together on some of these things and some of the programs, it would be amazing. Where would you say the most critical areas are, with the students, with bringing the instructors along, or with the administrative angle like SASE? What would you think are the most critical areas for us in the future?
I think it's hard to pick. I think the administrative software piece is a critical issue for us. SASE is transitioning to a new product, and we're going to have to make that transition regardless, and we see that coming in the future. And so we're trying to make that a smooth transition, and Amelia's led a group to really do a lot of research in that. So, I mean, that's a simple tool, but in terms of really implementing this plan, it's getting the staff trained is the key. I mean, they're the ones that are going to deliver it to the students. And as I mentioned, I think there's a perception out there that students, you know, just kind of gravitate to technology and they kind of know everything and they know more than us and that sort of thing. And I'm not sure that that's always the case, or they're not using it necessarily in the most effective way or in ways that they can. And I think having opportunities to have trained staff, provide them with educational opportunities that utilize technology is just absolutely critical. And it's the reason that, you mentioned the sinking fund early, and we're positioned now. I think every school now is the equipment is there, the infrastructure is there, and we're just seeing more and more interest because now it's a reliable tool for teachers to use in their classroom. And so they're coming to us with more and more and more ideas. And so providing the training for them is going to be key.
Thank you. Mrs. Botwood, sorry.
I just wanted to mention something that I'm very proud to talk about. Both Atascadero and Paso have programs for their, they have computer programs for their students, and they have also a troubleshooting program. And I was at one at Atascadero. We had a meeting there one time. We went into the classroom, and there's something like 28 kids in that classroom, and they're called out at any time by a teacher who will call in, by the office who will call in, and that is what they do all day long for a semester. And sometimes many of them, they're so good, they beg them to stay on for another semester. They rent out to the room, they rent out, and if necessary, they go to homes, but they charge a little bit for that. this is their job, and they're incredible. We have that option. I don't think we have enough kids that have signed up for it here. Do we? I know Morro Bay does have a troubleshooting class, don't they? They do have. Okay. I'm sorry, Mary, I can't hear you.
We'll hear now. We have a troubleshooting club, but not a class.
Uh-huh.
So they're doing their work outside of the regular school day to prepare for that competition.
Well, this is one of the things, and I'm going to be on my bandwagon here, but this is one of the things I think that if a kid is that good and becomes a troubleshooter and takes it and does it in school, he should get credit for it. Doesn't that make sense? Yes. Sorry.
Excuse me, Mrs. Botwin, I misunderstood with my cold, but we do have a computer repair class through ROP, and they do during the day troubleshoot computers to fix them at our schools,
at both
high schools.
Mm-hmm. They're the first level of tech support provided to the teachers. They submit work orders, and then anything that the students aren't able to address or that they can give us additional information, then it's submitted to the district level tech support. So we are partnering with our high schools. It's through the ROP program, yeah.
How's our progress in terms of response time when teachers are asking for help with the computers in their classroom? Are we making progress there?
Well, I think this year we've made a tremendous stride by returning a popular helpline for general technology troubleshooting. That was reduced a while back when we had to reduce staff in the department. But this year, with the additional staff, we're able to bring that back. And we have one of our computer techs who works at a helpline every morning from 7:30 to 11:30 taking calls from staff.
12 is disposition of surplus property. 13, approval of furniture and equipment requests. I'm waiting. 15, approval of purchase orders. 16, approval of warrants and payroll. 16, Class 3 disposable records. 17, approval of evaluation report for Pacheco Elementary School.
Move approval of items 10 through 17.
It is. I think it's a first. Is Mrs. Botwin okay? I think we should have let her make the motion. Okay, motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mrs. Dickinson to approve the consent agenda. All in favor? Aye. Passes 5-0. Number 18 is done, and number 19, our advance agenda. Anything you want to say about that, Dr. Valentine, or is that self-explanatory?
Well, our dance card is getting pretty full.
Did you think that maybe any of it could be pared down or paired up or paired together or anything? Are you happy with it, everybody? What do you want to do?
The only thing I guess I would seek clarification on was the music and visual arts program review. Our intent was through the budget discussion and the strategic planning discussion that accompanies the budget discussion to bring that forward, but I don't know how much specific detail the board would like because it would be embedded in other discussions as well.
I think I'm the one that brought this up and then Chris seconded it, but I'm really interested in during the school day instrumental program in grades 4, 5, and 6 that we used to have and reinstating that to build our band program. Our bands are wonderful, but they're not as big as they were. They're probably half the size, I would, in my informal estimation, guess. And I think that we need to build up our music program by providing instruction during the school day. So that would be... Would that be a budget item or just a what kind of an item? Do we have to talk about that before the budget?
Yeah, I think that would take some discussion.
I think so, too. So I'm interested in that. And so if we need to do it before the budget, I would like
Mrs. to. Mrs. Dickinson, would you be comfortable with having that come forward as a regular agenda item rather than a full study session? Since it sounds as though I don't want to say that, you know, you're already there, but it doesn't sound as much that you need to have a lot of questions answered as much as that you want an issue brought forward.
Well, I wanted input from the teachers and the principals and maybe parents, you know, about that. Not just what do we seven think about that, but, you know, I think principals were going to have some ideas about their school day and minutes, and parents may be interested if you're out there and you want your kids to learn to play instruments. They're much more likely to do it if they get to do it during the school day and rather than staying after school for band. And I think music is so important on development of the human brain as well as just how important it is in our culture. Our culture totally values music. So there's a disconnect between that value and how much we provide for it in our schools. So I think we need to... I just would like more input than just what do we think.
Mr. Spadafor?
Thank you. I was going to suggest or put out the idea that at some point what we might schedule, because I know there are community organizations that want to partner or want to bring forth ideas to try and bring visual arts and music back into the school system through the cuts, because of the cuts that have happened over the years, that maybe we could schedule at some point when it's appropriate that type of a forum where there can be the discussion of community partnerships, the introduction of other options into our system for music and visual arts in the sense of a forum, in the sense of a not a study session, but more of a forum.
Okay. Mr. Millar?
Thank you, Ed. And I just want to piggyback on what John just said. I'm on the board for the SLO County Arts Council, and one of the issues that I've talked with Dr. Matakovich about and the members of the Arts Council is they want to provide grants for teachers and sites to include visual and performing arts, and obviously there's lots of different mediums they're involved in, but there was a disconnect between their understanding of when our teachers and our schools build their curriculum for the following year and when they wanted the teachers to apply.
That might help, and it sounds like it's gotten bigger than just what's listed here. With that in mind, is it feasible to do it in April? It sounds like you're going to have to reach out to some groups and schedule it with...
The only reluctance I would have is that we're doing the budget and the strategic planning launch in April. I think to have a full-scale forum for a particular piece of that may be skewing the discussion.
Yeah, and it sounds as though it's become a bigger discussion that might have to take more planning and more lead time if you want to get all those different groups involved. It might have to go till after the budget, I would think.
That would put us in May or June sometime. Would that meet the board's interest?
Okay. Mrs. Dickinson?
It sounds like in that case we would be putting off this discussion about intermediate instrumental music until next year. If we put off the discussion of it, if the discussion of it is included in this broad spectrum forum or workshop or whatever, and it's not happening until May or June, could that still be happening by next year? And it's after the budget has already decided. I'm going back to maybe we should talk about it just as a separate thing.
I have a.
That's what I thought. I thought what you sounded like you were describing was that you wanted an action item.
Yeah, I would like an action item. I just don't know if are we ready for that? I don't know.
Well, you might be. I don't know if the rest of the board is, but it sounds as though you're about ready for an action item.
Yeah, I think there are broader implications than whether one could schedule instrumental music into the elementary school day, and it would be pretty easy to want that. Those would only be part of the discussion. The other part of the discussion would be what would happen to the elementary school day in order to make room for this, and how would that affect our intervention program schedules and things like that. At the moment, we have them all. If we move something into the schedule, it may have some casualties in the regular schedule. And I'm not sure whether you're ready to make a rapid discussion decision on that, or whether this is something that actually you would take a little more planning than perhaps a single night's discussion.
Are you willing then to put it off a little bit and look at it in the bigger picture, Mrs. Dickinson?
Since it is important to me, I don't want it to be easily, you know, flung aside. So it sounds like it has more hope in the long run, if it's considered in the big picture of the arts and the music, and we take some time with it.
So that would be the visual arts and the performing arts then, and a study session, it sounds like, on what we can do to strengthen them in our schools, including but not limited to with community support.
And I'm hearing,
does that sound right? Does that incorporate what everybody's hoping for?
And I'm hearing the May-June kind of time frame to have the discussion, and we will have instrumental music in the fall as we do right now, but it would give us time to kind of rethink how we might want to approach that topic.
Okay. I think that there's consensus on that, Mr. Spadafore?
Yeah, I believe so. And I was just going to suggest that the additional time will give us an opportunity, as you had mentioned earlier, to notify the Arts Council and the different community groups that have assets and interests in working with the district to provide programs or assist. That'll give us the information to see what's available. So we need to be able to contact those groups, the Arts Council, Symphony, the others, so we can then have that session.
I would also like to have a presentation on what's presently being done, because I think a lot of times people, when they talk about cuts in the arts, I think sometimes they don't realize just how much we are already doing through creative use of site funds and with Children's Creative Project and the Symphony Strings Program. It's not the same at all sites, I think, but there is a lot going on that's already started, and maybe if we know that, then we can know where we need to build in filling gaps.
One last comment. I think that learning to play a musical instrument can be part of an intervention program for kids in an academic and behavioral and all kinds of ways, can assist them in being more successful students.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that forward, Mrs. Dickinson, and we'll see that sometime in the summer then. Okay. Anything else?
Tonight in a California Distinguished School.
We are. Thank you, Mrs. Shields. Here we are at C.L. Smith Center. And Marie, yes. And we even have a beautiful banner on the podium to remind us of that status. So now that would mean how many do we have already, Dr. Valentine?
Let's count them. We have Hawthorne Elementary School. We have C.L. Smith Elementary School. We have Monarch Grove Elementary School. We have Morro Bay High School. By the way, Monarch Grove is also a National Blue Ribbon School. Morro Bay High School has been nominated for a National Blue Ribbon School, and we'll learn about that later. And to that august group, we are adding Del Mar and Sinsheimer, at least at the visitation stage.
That's fantastic. Everybody involved in every capacity in the district can take pride in that. That's great. Is anybody here? I think the people from those schools are not here tonight, but I know we'll hear from them when the visitation has occurred and they have the happy news to share with us. My understanding is once you get to this level, it's almost a done deal.
It's very, very, very close. Might I add one more thing to my report, if I may? For the tolerance workshop, we would like the study session, which is March 21st, we would like to move that to the front of the agenda, if we might, because we will have students and kids involved.
That's great. Thank you. Okay. Any board members wish to make a report?
Just piggybacking on that, here's that article from EdCal called Campus Non-Discrimination Policies Examined in Study from CaliforniaSafeSchools.org, and maybe I'll give this to you, and maybe Kim could distribute it to the board before the meeting, too. And some of us read at Read Across America at Pacheco. It was so much fun. I got to read I did poetry that I recited. I learned from my mother growing up. Third grade and fourth grade and sixth grade classes, and the kids were delightful listeners, and I had them up reciting their poetry they had memorized, and I got this wonderful thank you note from Mrs. Peters' class with all the kids writing on it, and Ms. Susan Fazziato wrote too, and I just felt so gratified and privileged. And I want to say I feel so privileged working with our staff too. And I see Mary Matakovich over there and all of you, Dr. Valentine and Russell and Kim and everyone, Damien and all of you. So I'm privileged to work with the people in this district.
Mrs. Botwin?
I disagree with what you just said, Adrienne. I went over to Read Across America, too, and I never saw... They were wiggly, squiggly little first graders. They made faces at me while I was reading to them, and they laughed inappropriately. They reminded me of miniature high school students at their worst. But they were cute. And I read Three Billy Goats Gruffs. You guys, is that, would that scare anybody? Well, these little first graders, about half of them, put their hands up to their eyes. I can't look at it. I can't look at it. I was like, these guys are... Anyhow, it was fun, but I was supposed to read to another class, and I didn't. I ran. I only went because Marilyn called me, and she asked me. She said, I can't make it. I have to work. Could you go for me? And that was a mistake. And I said, well, okay. So I went over. It was wonderful, and they did a wonderful job. And the kids really are wonderful, but 38 years of teaching high school kids, and you go in and look at some first graders, it's just not another world. I do have a request I'd like of the other board members, even though we're not all here right now. I see that on May 2nd, we have a superintendent's evaluation. That's fine. And it's also a little bit on the discussion on April 4th. May 16th, we have another superintendent's evaluation. And I wondered, I know we're not, we don't have an exact timeline there. Could we move the May 16th evaluation into until June 6th meeting? Because I'll be out of town on the 16th, and I wanted to be a part of that, the evaluation, if we could move it to June 6th.
It's fine with me. Dr. Valentine's nodding, so... We have a policy, but I don't think it's a formal policy. It's just sort of guidelines that we came up with.
We do have a notification requirement clause.
Does it create any problems with the clause about notification, Dr. Valentine?
I'll have to check on that, but I'm sure we can work it out.
Okay. All righty. If we can. Alrighty. I went to Pacheco, too, and I had the kindergarten and first grade classes, and I just had so much fun all day. I was smiling all day from those kids, and I was blown away by the teachers, the way the teachers communicate with the children at Pacheco. Such a bond at that school that you feel from... would entertain a motion. Move adjournment. Mr. Millar, second by Mrs. Dickinson. Away we go. Thank you, everybody.